you need to think first what it is the absolute necessary just to really having, let's say, your minimum viable product before you go on and start actually just doing something and say, oh, I want to put there 1,000 features. And the idea is why? So early on, you don't need 1,000 features. So that it is actually what happens in there. You have to give them a structure and say that you have to just architect based on what it is realistic if you want to survive, right?
Welcome to AI Vantage, where modern leaders decode the future of tech. I'm Solomon Williams, founder of Solonauts. So here, it's no noise, no hype every week. Sometimes it's just me, and sometimes it's the brightest minds in tech, breaking down what it really takes to grow smarter with AI and automation. Let's dive in. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm your host, Solomon Williams. We have a wonderful guest today for today's episode. I want to introduce Dr. Irene Kinsella. She's the managing consultant for Axio4 Tech. Dr. Irene, thank you so much for coming onto the show. Can you introduce yourself to the guest and, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself?
Oh, thank you so much. I mean, thank you for inviting me. Okay, so I was born and raised in Greece. And I did my first degree in Greece, in one of our best universities in there, and in engineering, of course. And then I moved to North America just to finish my graduate studies, my master's and PhD at Columbia University in the city of New York. So at the time, and still, I mean, everything it was around next network technologies and how we are going to evolve what we know first as the internet these days and also and ongoing from that point forward. To get into what it is the future of that thing that we call the internet and communicate. So after my graduation, I was offered a position at the University of Toronto, and I was just teaching for a couple of years at the electrical and computer engineering and also the computer science. However, because I am specializing in large systems and all of that, it was much more appealing to go and just build the systems. And it was actually the proper time in the early 2000s to do something like that, because a lot of things were happening. It was the time that we saw the first things leaving the lab and actually in applications. So it was much more appealing. And my journey from there, it was a lot of consulting in different formats, from Lucent Technologies Consulting here in Toronto to then our first consulting company that it was actually in network infrastructure management and security. And around 2016, that graduated to a second company, Axio4 Tech, and that company also just focusing on helping businesses of all sizes just to really integrate and commercialize new technology from the lab and make them useful for them. Because what we have found over the years is that a lot of the tools, they look nice, but then they are not really getting the traction and the productivity that you sign for. In parallel, I'm supporting a lot the startup ecosystem. I like the idea. So as long as you keep a cool head, that not everybody's going to become a unicorn, because this is not possible. So yeah, I have a very long kind of almost 10 years of either consulting in startups, also taking the role of their, you know, fractional CTO or a CTO until the getting off the ground and things like that. And in other companies that they're a little bit more mature, typically my role, it is actually as a CTO of the company, just to help them put all the structure in order to scale. So that is pretty much, I mean, what I'm doing in my day to day. And also, you know, always technology and how we can use it more effectively for not only for the big ones, but for everyone.
Yeah. And I think this is to gain on so much experience that you have. You know, what for our audience and just for myself, what does a day to day look like for you as the CTO for these, either for startup, for these other larger enterprises? What does that look like for you on a day to day once you're...
Yeah, it changes a lot, because if it is the bigger the organization, there are much more rigid structures still to this day. Although a lot of the larger organizations, they have just really adopted agile and all of that, but still they struggling with this concept, because the bigger and older the organization, the more it is still into this idea of you know, how we used to call it the waterfall kind of So that is one end of the spectrum. And the other end of the spectrum, it is actually the startups, that they are, as a CTO, pretty much. I like to joke and say that you are a glorified garbage collector. And the thing is that pretty much whatever falls on the floor, you have to find something. So everybody's going to come to you for something. So it is a different experience, which actually I do enjoy. So then there is also a medium, which actually it is not so common, a small and medium kind of corporations, companies. They do not have so much the budget to really have in that structure. So startups, you know that you're just helping them a fraction of what you really you're supposed to be paid. I mean, large, more established organizations, yes, they just have in their own kind of structure in there, but the middle is kind of left on its own. And that is actually my feeling in a lot of the things, because the bigger tools are just too expensive for them.
Yep.
Doing that on their own, it is prohibiting because they do not have, you know, the proper equipment, people, strategies, and they don't have the time to develop because, again, that also has a cost. So they are kind of their own.
So, and I know that because we're kind of in similar structures because I've been focusing with Solarox on working with small to medium businesses, just on specifically on AI to help them grow and so forth. But like, as you said, as a startup, you have to really think of what is the whole outcome of what they're trying to accomplish. And you have to think from a different mindset. So I'm curious on when you first start on the role, you know, is it mostly just discovery for you of what's going on to try to see their outcome and then be that solutionizer to help them block out, like you said, any technical debt or support? Like, what has do you think that separates it from when you're working with the startup and helping them more accomplish versus the businesses that have a little bit more, you know, experience, I guess, that has more of that employee size?
Right. I mean, the startup pretty much it is exploratory. It is a little bit, so there are two things. And typically you have in engineers that they are extremely motivated, perhaps sometimes believe that they know more than the actual know, not for any other reason, because, you know, the thing is nobody knows everything. And at the same time, I mean, you need a couple of years of experience to just and work very hard to accumulate, you know, knowledge and also knows how to. So there it is mostly on a guidance because it is a little bit of everything. And so you need actually to create at least a structure that everybody agrees on. So the thing is that it's not, and also say it's not pure exploration because the money are going to run out, okay, and always run out. It is actually mostly that, okay, you need to think first what it is the absolute necessary just to really having, let's say, your minimum viable product before you go on and start actually just doing something and say, oh, I want to put there 1,000 features. And the idea is why? So early on, you don't need 1,000 features. So that it is actually what happens in there. You have to give them a structure and say that you have to just architect based on what it is realistic if you want to survive, right? Because 90% of the businesses in such an environment, they're not going to make it to the next step. And it has nothing, I mean, there's a million different reasons for that. It's not because the technology is not the greatest or anything. Actually, in a lot of ways, how good is the technology is the least. I have to say that, although, I mean, I wish it was different, but mostly marketing, connections, and all of the other stuff that in the end is not going.
I think that's important, especially just in our field as we grow and so forth, that you become so with the emergence of, you know, the AI and utilizing all the generated content, you know, there might be a focus too much on it to accomplish what you need without taking the human element, as you said, just it needs to work on proper marketing, the connections, you know, that's what's really going to improve upon it.
Yeah.
So with that said, what do you see, you know, since you have so much experience with different consultants, what are you seeing the major shifts now in the industry? I'm sure, of course, it's AI, but what do you see for the client?
I mean, the AI is actually front and center because it attracts a lot of attention, which is great. We have been in, again, in the same cycle. We have to put AI to something just because AI is in the news, which actually is completely opposite when you're doing, when you go there to just add into the operations and the productivity of any organization of any size. So you don't take a tool because AI is nothing more than a tool and try to find where it's going to fit or actually fit your problem to use the tool. It is the way around. So there are problems that they are going in different degrees and in different kinds of configurations, solve the problem that it is a problem in the organization. So for example, I mean, employee AI just for your help desk. It is a thing because pretty much, I mean, that makes things much more accurate. It can fit from your database. You don't have to enter these things manually. professionally, you're giving, you know, documents and everything. But now just say, okay, I have absolutely to put AI in there because everybody does it. I mean, it is a very bad, you know, proposition. And it's not the first time that it happens. It happens over and over again with other tools. So take AI and put, you know, anything, put blockchain in there, or even, you know, previously, a lot of new technologies they have in, because it is exciting, it is there. But I always say that look what is the problem you try to solve and see where is the best tools and just solve it.
And so with that said, do you see that that has, with that being so front and center, has that been, how has that impacted your business or in your growth as a consultant for Axio for Tech?
I have to say that I'm not subscribing to the fear about AI that it's, and I will explain you why I say that, that is going to, it's going to create disruptions. This is for sure. Any new technology creates certain disruptions, but the answer, it is not to say, okay, put it aside because, for example, it's going to become uncomfortable for some people or they have to re-educate themselves and all of that. If you're approaching as a tool, what you have to do is that the people that might have an impact, their positions that they have and everything, because there's a lot of talk, okay, a lot of people are going to lose their jobs. Yes, some people are losing their jobs and there might be more. I think that the shift should be not on that. The shift should be, okay, how we can re-educate our people. Because if you see that, even all of these people that they do certain work now that could be done automatically could be re-educated and A, having a better working experience themselves. So I don't see the problem as being, okay, we bring technology, we are creating problems for people, but the problem, it is a little bit bigger, which actually it's not a technology problem to solve, if you know what I mean. It is actually how the organizations and also the, you know, the governments in the structures are going to support that transition.
So, and I'm really sometimes on that. It's just, have you felt that it's sometimes been either, what it has that been able to bring forward more on the business side because you're educating your clients on, you know, not be fearful how this implements? I can imagine just from what I've worked with clients before, it's they sometimes think on how, if I implement this into my workflow, is there a lot more technical debt? Is it going to be very expensive? So as you, as the consultant, as you said, coming through as a leadership side to help them, you know, to grow, has that, you know, helped Axio for Tech's business on, has that been working well with you on educating them? Has that been frustrating? I'm curious to get your thoughts on it as an experienced consultant.
Oh yeah, it is a mixed bag. Okay. And I tell you that it varies a lot. I mean, in startups, it's an easier kind of a conversation because we might, you know, it's a sunny new toy. Okay, we want to play with. Some people actually they don't want so much to change. But and again, it's not a new thing. In all my 20 something years of consulting in different organizations, it is always the same kind of theme. Just bringing something better and newer and more usable does not necessarily equate that you're going to get adoption from the people that they're using. I mean, even to these days, you'd be surprised how very large organizations, very complex organizations, they have actually someplace a piece of, you know, code from, I don't know, the 1980s, the 1970s, that still there are two people that they are never going to stop using it. So that one, it is mostly in larger environments, but your resistance is mostly about getting what we call the buy-in. So, and there's also how they are just really view that. Are they view that we bring in new tools and we're going to make things better, so it's going to be better for all of us? Or it is the fear that pretty much my job is not secure anymore? So it is mostly like the human element in a lot of ways. And you have actually to just explain what it can or it cannot do. Because the other thing that we have in the media a lot of times, they overpromise what AI can do. I'm not saying that one day is not going to just do all of these things, but even, you know, most of the AI with in the first two iterations that we saw very recently, like generative AI and actually the traditional one, what they're doing is they're a better kind of a parsing machine with a little bit of logic, so they can just really tell you and locate much faster information that do exist. Right. Okay, so agentic AI, it's moving to the collaboration, but I mean, still AI AI cannot think for itself. And I don't think that we are anywhere there in there. So for example, you cannot just ask AI and tells her, okay, create me the best system ever just to solve X. Okay. What it's going to tell you is, okay, gets the keywords and it's going to say, look, this is solutions for that problem. But that it is different, right? It is actually, it increases your speed. Instead of having to research a project, you know, for a month, all the reading, you can do this in less time and actually avoid also things that they are irrelevant. So that it is a huge progress. But at the same time, it's not. I mean, it's not that AI is going to just really start thinking for everyone and do whatever, right? So even the actions that AI agents are doing, actually, they are within certain kind of constraints. So an agent cannot really learn the way that the human learns. So, and I think that there is a disconnect in there because people thinking that, you know, and you hear all these, you know, theories about what is going to happen and, you know, and the sky is falling and, you know, machines are going to take over and so forth. So I'm not subscribing to that. I mean, the thing is that any good tool can be put in a good use.
Yes.
That is much more complicated to what is classes of the technology that will carry.
So you bring up a point. So with that being said, with agentic, as you said, it's focused on agentic AI. What do you see in the next year on that? What do you foresee as AI continues in the next year?
Yes, I mean, a couple of things. So first of all, AI, it starts starving from information, right? So it's one thing to crawl the internet in order to really get your models going. And it's another thing because there are pockets and a lot of pockets, especially if we're talking about technology, that they are not accessible. Even you cannot crawl them, right? I mean, there is a huge databases. I mean, not all the libraries in the world or the engineering libraries and all of that, you know, are accessible or digitized. So all of this knowledge is not getting there. The other thing is that we have in the closed systems, like the Googles, the Amazons, or anybody who's doing AI agents at a particular point, which actually these systems also are going to optimize for their own, you know, purposes, but it's not getting there. And AI is becoming more and more intelligent as more and more data are available. And then you're getting into other problems, the quality of the data that you're feeding systems. And also, are these really honest data in the sense, I mean, they have not been manipulated in any way. So you have also the ethical problems about, you know, the manipulation of information, because, I mean, you can bias the model. I mean, it is a piece of, you know, it's a bunch of algorithms. They're as good as the data that you just feed to them. So this is all concerns, and they are going to be more and more becoming bigger concerns as we're moving forward. And especially, I mean, ethical kind of AI is a big issue, and should we all should be really consider that. So there is another part which actually it is very interesting, just that the distributed AI models, and also not only distributed, but decentralized. So there they borrow the idea of decentralization, which means that there is not actually one entity, the middle, that actually manages everything, but you're doing the computation distributed and also with different kinds of collaborators. So see that a little bit as decentralization was introduced to everyday vocabulary with blockchain, right?
Yep.
And again, there, again, you ask different people, they think different things about decentralization. So the thing is that in decentralization is that there's not only one authority in there, but there are many. You don't have to go to the extreme that everybody in there that participates in an authority. But at the same time, it is a very interesting evolution in the AI, this decentralized actually computation. Actually different sources are coming in and everybody keeps, if you like, an eye to everybody else that they're just doing the computation. Also, there is a share of the computational resources that could be very useful as well.
Right. And I think that, as you said, that the future trends, I know that they want to have it to where there's multiple agents talking to each other to help it.
The collaboration. Yes. So that's the next step, because right now there is no way that they are actually starting to collaborate. But I can see the AI also play a very good kind of role in when attached to machinery, in taking some decisions that actually could be associated with safety or other things, and that the human, or together with the human, might not react so fast. So there are a lot of applications that you can envision. So, but yes, the agentic AI, the idea is that the agents, they taking some actions and perhaps can collaborate between different machines and together as a group can just really finish it off.
Yeah, it's really going to be an interesting time in the next, especially of how fast it's been moving to see on it. And especially now that it's being seen as how AI is being worked in into a business structure, how this, now we've gotten to a point it can work in. Now I'm curious to see what the new products and what others going to be in collaboration with enterprises and so forth. So I want to switch over to, you know, have it, since we've talked about all of that with the trends of AI, you know, for your business, for the Axio for Tech on the consulting side, with all that said, what is your goal for like the next 6 to 12 months of where you would like to go for the consulting? For yourself?
Yeah, actually, for myself, because I'm coming from networks and network management and communication systems and all, I see a huge opportunity in there just to incorporate actually AI and blockchain at the enterprise level, and also just to streamline and improve actually operations, because it's not so much for, if you are an enterprise operation, you're not so much, let's make an open system, because I mean that does not go very well with, you know, companies in general, but it is can I save money by just doing X? So I'll just anticipate that we are going to see much more over, and I see much more interest for both AI and blockchain in areas that we haven't touched before or we don't, like telecom, anything has, and this is in a place in a different place. It is actually how I can manage my network. So one of my areas of research, it is how I can use AI just to manage the network itself. Mm-hmm. And telling you from experience, managing a very large network, it is not for the faint at heart. So, and the thing is that there is going to, and already a lot of the network management kind of techniques, they have just moving more and more to software, with the software-defined networks for their managements and so forth. So pretty much, I mean, this seems like the obvious next evolution, right? Because so AI, it is not so new as everybody believes. What we have that now, it is that we have the computational capacity to see that, you know, become real.
So would you say that that's the major challenge today that you would like to, where you come in, is having it to where, how do you figure out with the large, because from networking, from my experience of building for on the cloud engineering side of building out hub and spoke to pilot, you're having all of this data if they want to have it, you know, on-prem or private, whether they want a hybrid approach for on the cloud, working with data warehouses. So is it, that's on that side, do you think that's going to be a frustration and a continuation as you come in and figure these out and how to implement AI? Or is it more on the fact of just on the leadership side, you coming in and, you know, helping them to direct what resources they have? Because as you said before, it's a lot of buy-in from that side. They have to get into it. So do you feel like that's going to be a boundary, or do you think that with your experience, that's going to be something you can easily transition for them to get on board with?
Okay, so there's two levels. The one, it is the education portion. It's actually most of the time it is working just to get the buy-ins from, you know, the executives, so as a direction of their strategy, because mm-hmm. it's not going to be. And the other one, it is very specific projects. That pretty much, if you see that there is a pocket of an opportunity, because as an architect, always you see what is the problem, how I'm going to solve it. So if there is actually a pocket of opportunity that says, okay, this kind of product, if you like, or this kind of approach is going to be beneficial, you can just really educate and also just help them towards that. So it is different to different levels, and in most cases, they have to come together, right? Because it's one thing to put a system in place, it's another thing if it is not usable, it is as if that you didn't put it in the system, actually.
Yes.
And I have seen cases like that, because for a million reasons, not all technology related, but yeah, organizations end up with systems that they are not used as they're supposed to use them.
Yeah. And then again, I think that's where you, It's more on, I could imagine, just as CTD coming in, it's more of understanding, like, as you said, the discovery phase, but also on a people management to really kind of understand what their goals are, how to align, and then how to, you know, walk their hand, not essentially just guiding them to get to their goal and having them think on a different perspective.
Yeah. And another thing that any established organization has, it is this kind of ongoing battle of integrate the different systems that they have. Because right. I know that when you see, especially existing products, everything say, okay, yes, it is, you know, off the shelf. I'm telling you, to my experience all these years, I haven't seen one true off the shelf. All of these will need some integration effort. Most probably you see similar kind of stuff. So there is also another parameter in there, how you're going to integrate the new tools into, you know, the existing tools. But because it is an investment, it's a huge investment from the past. And sometimes, I mean, it is, and most of the time, the problem is the quality of the data that each of the subsystems that they are carry in the end, because just to really make them talk to each other, it is quite interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. It's especially on the cross integration, it's going to be a lot, especially with any legacy applications they have and so forth. So, you know, my next one is that if you had a magic wand for your business, if you could remove any bottleneck to get to the goal that the 6 to 12 month by the end of this year, how would you use AI or how would you use automation to help you achieve that goal for yourself and for?
Oh, you mean from our own operations? Yeah.
From Allegiant, whichever.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is that anyways, the business, because it's a consulting business, so pretty much, I mean, the goal is to help the customer, the client, and find the best and the most cost-effective solution for the customer and keep on going. And typically, I mean, we are attacking a lot of niche-type projects, which actually others didn't manage to really crack it, if you like. So smaller or other smaller or larger kind of consultancies. So for us, it is constant experimentation just to be ahead of the curve, because the thing is how you are going to propose something if you don't know how it works. So a lot of time it goes to see what is out there and constantly, you know, experiment with that. So that's a lot of my time that is going. So I just looking for all the tools, everything that is out there. I have to take them to see how it is and see what it is real from actually what it's advertised to be, and also see what other hidden kind of because everything looks so polished and nice, everything. I mean, everything is so perfect, okay? Right. It's wonderful that we live in a perfect universe, but don't believe that actually, especially networks are very, very messy, yes. And very complex. So the thing is, it's not perfect. I would like to see in one day that everything's going to be, you know, pure perfection, but actually perfection is not everything. It is actually make it usable.
Right. So you could say that is it fair to say that if the magic wand would be there, is just getting the whole picture, the networking, and then figuring out exactly how.
If I had the magic wand, I would like to know how technology is going to evolve in the next years. However, as we very well would know from the past, it is the most dangerous thing to do. It is actually to predict which way technology is going to go. And we see that over and over and over again, because they were actually the assumptions at one point, they didn't go that way. I mean, I know that we are out of time, but I mean, look at the history of wireless communications. It's actually absolutely fantastic. Nobody believed actually that the cell phone is going to be a service that is going to be for the masses. And that's why the very first wireless networks, they were just under engineered because they were not vectored. So that's why I say the only advice is that don't make any predictions. Just have your eyes open and evaluate what it is in front of you, and also look between the lines, because sometimes, I mean, things are not as perfect as they are presented to be. Yeah.
Yeah. And this has been great. So, you know, Irene, I want to really thank you so much for coming on to the show. For our listeners, if they're ever interested in kind of utilizing Axial Fortech, where can they find you? Where can they learn more about what you do in your journey?
Right. I mean, the easiest way, I am at LinkedIn. I can just send the link so you can post it with the podcast. And pretty much, I mean, this is actually, I'm mostly using the LinkedIn. I'm also in other social media, but I have to say that, let's say I have way too much work to do in a day just really posting, but and I don't want other people to post on my behalf. So,
right.
So the thing is that LinkedIn is good. I mean, I like to talk. I'm good about talking to people. I mean, even if there's, I don't believe that that any question ever that is a stupid question. So, and I like to just educate, you know, everybody, because I think that the more educated we are, the better we are going to be for our decisions.
Yeah, and I feel that. I think this conversation really helps getting your perspective and from all of your experience that you've had from working from, you know, startups to, you know, a little bit larger enterprises. So I appreciate you coming to educating myself and the audience. So thanks for everyone for tuning into the show. We'll see you next time on the next episode. Take care.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the AI Advantage. If this episode sparked an idea, share it with your network. Subscribe for more No Fluff conversations on how smart tech drives real outcomes. And if you're ready to future-proof your business, let's connect at salonox.net.